Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com. Welcome to Holmes & Hops. We have two very special guests today. First, we have Sean Posey, freelance writer, photographer, historian, style guru.
Your style is like 1920.
I love it. I absolutely love it. I know you guys can't see this, but Sean is wearing a hat. What style hat is that?
It's like you probably call it like a newsboy cap, but it's it was actually made by a guy in Australia using a cap block, because all hats and caps are made of blocks, from 1910. So it's a 1910 style.
Nice.
Very cool. What was that movie, that musical? Newsies?
Newsies, yeah.
Was that around that same time frame?
Christian Bale, yeah. That was probably in the early 1900s, like maybe 1910 or 1912 or something like that, I think, if I remember.
Very cool. I'm glad I was able to make the association. But Sean, not only does he style and your photography, if anybody follows him on Facebook, is awesome. It really is. It's Thanks. Beautiful work. But he has also written a couple of books about our area, Lost Youngstown, and the historic theaters of Youngstown and the Mahoning Valley. And the first time I actually met Sean, he came to one of our brokerage meetings and schooled us all on the history of housing in our area and why it's so special, which was awesome. And I definitely repeated everything that he said to us with probably how many clients afterwards for an extended period of time, and still utilize that information. So thank you very much.
Oh, very cool to hear.
And then we also have Ira Gerhardt, co-owner of Noble Creature, which is located downtown. What's up, Ira?
Not too much.
He is
hanging out at the brewery.
Just brewing some beer still, right?
Yep, absolutely.
And I am drinking some Noble Creature, the Petrushka. I feel like I did a better job before
you
I started
drinking close.
It.
Yeah. Tasting all right?
It tastes delicious. Now, what's the percentage? 9?
I think that one's 10. Yeah,
oh,
I think
10.
That batch was 10 that we canned up. Yeah, so
God, that was higher than what he originally stated, wasn't it?
It's a good, late afternoon snack for sure.
It is. So this is an imperial milk?
There's no. That's just a Russian imperial stout. So it's just real big and roasty. A lot of roast character. Yep, just a kind of a classic Russian imperial stout. So,
well, it tastes delicious. So
thank you. Yeah.
So as you guys know, we are definitely in unprecedented times. I think all of us have been adapting as best as we can and doing whatever we can to help flatten the curve and hopefully henceforth getting back to normal sooner. With each of you, like Sean, like with everything that you do, because you're so creative in all aspects, how have you been adapting and adjusting things for yourself?
Well, I'm in the house and I'm not going anywhere like everybody else. I've been working on an article about the Spanish flu epidemic here in 1918, which has a lot of parallels. So it's like a local history piece, but it's also about what could we learn from the Spanish flu, which was the last real pandemic that you could compare to the one that we're undergoing now. And, you know, it was dealt with, I mean, obviously the level of scientific and medical knowledge was far less, but it was dealt with in a similar fashion, as in social distancing, though nobody used that term, you know, locking the city down, closing everything. So, you know, people were going through something similar 102 years ago or so to what we're going now, except a lot more people were dying.
Which, thankfully, our medical science has progressed extensively since then. And thankfully, it's been how many years? Over 100 years since the last pandemic. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting when you're talking about like lessons learned and things going forward, when we're looking at this on not just the social aspect of getting back out there into the world, but on a business side, a historical context, how can that help us when we are hopefully back out in the world, if you will? What do you think?
Well, a couple of things. There was a lot of fear after World War I ended right about the time that the Spanish flu was hitting America hard. But there was a lot of fear that the economy was going to go south after the war, once war production slowed down and everything like that. And then, of course, the Spanish flu would have an effect. Now, it didn't turn out that way. We recovered pretty quickly. So it's hard. I think it's hard to compare our time to then for a lot of reasons. One was, we were just coming out of a big war. But one thing I think we really could learn from that time was that, like you see now, there was a lot of cities and states that approached the pandemic differently, and areas that practiced what we would now call social distancing came out much better than areas that did not. And one of the classic examples is Philadelphia, which had a very large parade kind of to celebrate the war. And it was very ill-advised, and it helped really, supercharge the influenza pandemic in that city and kill a lot more people. Here, unluckily for us, there was a big parade celebrating Czechoslovakian Americans right before this really got bad, and that probably spread it around here a lot without people knowing, though. It hadn't really kicked off yet. So I think one thing we could learn from that pandemic was that if we loosen things too early, we risk doing far more damage than if we ride it out as best we can, which of course will do damage anyway to the economy. But yeah. I think it would be far worse if we opened things up too early. The pandemic was supercharged again, and then we had to go back into lockdown. I think that would be far worse than just an extended lockdown, trying to get it all over with all at once.
Is there any examples of cities showing a gradual reintroduction into society and norms? So it's like one of those things that people talk about, like the Dave Matthews Band and their concert coming up this summer, or I know that the amphitheater has concerts and all these different venues. I wonder, like come June, are they going to allow large gatherings of people, or are they going to try to hold that off as long as they can, especially because they don't have a vaccination or anything at this time?
I think we don't know, because we don't know, I think, yet how bad it's going to get. We think that May might be the peak. We don't know because there's not a like a blanket restriction across the country. So some parts of the country are doing a better job distancing people than others. So that makes it hard to say. I think, a couple of things could happen in the summer is you could see the virus recede during the summer and a return to normalcy, and then you could see the virus reemerge in the fall. Another worry, or maybe not another worry, but another thing that I think you could expect is that instead of everybody, there's some kind of all clear signal that comes out, we're past the peak, we're past the worst of it. I don't think that you might see return to normalcy that you think. People might be quite wary of going back into very crowded public situations, especially if things get bad. There could be a lot of hesitancy there for someone to say, hey, let me go to a concert with a few thousand people. I don't know. It's hard to say, but it's hard to judge people's psychology at this point in time.
No, it's true. I don't know about either of you, but I'm a hugger. I am 100% a hugger. And I go back like, I can't wait until I could go around and hug people again. I think I might hug random strangers. It doesn't matter. But then I think to myself, or will I be a little bit more hesitant in hugging people just out of the concern of the lingering virus that is out there? Because it's not going to go away. It's just something else that we're combating.
It's another, people are social species. and you know, we need other people. And I think if we don't do that to some, you know, if we don't do a little bit of that, you're going to see another fallout, which will be psychological damage from people that are too isolated.
Yeah.
People that don't, you know, we know from medical studies that people that go without physical touch and that have extreme feelings of loneliness, that's unhealthier than either being obese or being a regular smoker. I mean, it's just plain unhealthy. So we do need that too. So you almost have to measure that as well. I mean, people can't be locked away from each other for forever or for very, very long periods of time. So that will cause other problems as well. I mean, psychological problems among other things.
Well, thankfully Ira still has his doors open. I know Noble Creature has definitely been creative in their adaptation to the current environment and what you've been doing.
Yeah, we're just, you know, we're trying to look at it a different way. I mean, we definitely, you know, miss people coming into the tap room. We never, like I was saying earlier, we never really wanted to be a production facility, but we kind of find ourselves right now that, you know, everything that we had packaged in kegs that would, we'd either sell out of the tap room or, you know, or wholesale to other bars, you know, that we can't do that right now. So basically what we're doing is just trying to get all that product into other packaging like cans or bottles, and everything is just to go. And it's kind of depressing, but you know, we're doing what we gotta do to get through this safely and ethically. And you know, we miss all our friends coming in. You know, we had a lot of people here the day that order went out that were just, you know, really, really bummed out, but you know, it's obviously for the best. But I mean, that's, you know, this was a place where people would come to, and our whole goal was to give this building like a new life, you know, and for people to come and, you know, just a old style pub, public house where people get together and just talk to strangers and, you know, meet new people, make new friends, all of that. So this is definitely, it's definitely a new situation right now. But you know, we're doing what we can do to get through it. We set up online ordering. We're probably going to start doing more, you know, some live shows via Instagram or Facebook coming up. Maybe just do more footage of, you know, what we're doing. We're still making beer. We're still in production mode a little bit. So we're just going to keep brewing, keep doing what we can do, and you know, take it week by week. I think everything that you guys tapped into earlier is true. I think this is going to be, I don't know how long it's going to go on from, you know, whether it's mandatory to practice social distancing or, you know, if they kind of lift that. I think it's going to be a while for people to feel comfortable coming to public spaces again. So I think that could really take a while. And, you know, if there is a, you know, if it does kind of clear up and then there's another onset in the fall, that's going to be pretty rough. But you know, I think most people are taking this really seriously and really doing their best, especially around this area to do what they can to, you know, kind of limit this. And like you said, flatten the curve. So we'll just kind of see what happens, take it week by week, and hopefully we can all get through this, you know, safely. And
what's interesting though, Ira, is that like with homes and hops and everything, it's the idea of what breweries bring to communities. Mm-hmm. And having that local establishment, which Sean, I'm sure would appreciate the historic building that you're in, but bringing that to life and having people have the ability to go in and experience that. But I will have to say what you guys have done and still being participating and still being part of the community, even though your doors are closed, is phenomenal. Like you're still offering, like we love Marcy's bagels and her bread. Like you guys are still figuring out ways to bring something that is so important to us, more important, those things are more important to us now that it's not easily accessed, and having those memories and knowing that it's relating to a good thing more so than ever. Like I really do believe that. And then of course the beer, 10%. There goes my 5% rule.
All right. Hey, you're quarantined. It's okay. But yeah, no, I think that goes with anything. You know, you got to appreciate the, you know, the little things in life, especially now more than ever, whether it's, you know, art, poetry, writing, you know, or it's just, you know, simple, you know, locally baked bread or brewed beer that just gives you a sense of, you know, self and space and space and time and where you're at in the world. Just, you know, a reminder of, you know, I don't want to say what things used to be like, but, you know, more like the, you know, what it's like to be out and about. A little taste of that is can definitely go a long way, especially, you know, for people that do feel more isolated or just, yeah, you know, genuinely, you know, not as outgoing as other people. It's hard to, especially now where you're kind of forced to stay in one spot. It's, I don't want to say depressing, but, you know, you miss everybody coming into the bar. It's like that first day, it's, you know, when we're like, oh man, you know, we're not going to see all these people here for who knows how long. You're just like, you realize it's the little things that really that matter. So
I know that first person walking in the door is gonna probably get much praise. So both of you, the reason why I thought you two would be awesome together is both of you appreciate the historic context of the city of Youngstown. Sean, obviously, with most of, actually, I guess my first question to you, Sean, is what brought you into that? Like at what point did you start veering towards the historic nature and everything that the city of Youngstown, when it comes to housing, when it comes to the buildings, the theater that we offer, what brought your attention and your passion in that direction?
Well, I was born here, but I've not lived most of my life here. I came back here a few years ago during the Great Recession and from Florida. And I actually went to grad school at YSU at the time for history. And all of my grad school in history is mostly about doing your own research, writing research papers, I did a thesis. All the stuff I did was about Youngstown because I realized, well, there's a lot of local history that here that it jives pretty well with national history. So you can do research on the area and tell stories of national history like unionization or housing or migration or things like that. And I was aware from my dad grew up here in the 40s and 50s. So he had a lot of stories about the area during the time period that had already, you know, kind of piqued my interest. So I was aware of some of the things that was here. And that's how I started. So after I did my thesis, after I graduated a few years after that, I got an opportunity to write Lost Youngstown. And I wrote both of the books at the same time, but a lot of it was based on research I had been doing before and articles I had been writing for that were more journalistic in nature. Youngstown is kind of symbolic of the evolution of most industrial cities in the country in the 19th and 20th century. Every bit as much, though on a smaller scale, as someplace like, say, Detroit.
That's very true. And then when it comes to the historic buildings and everything that we have here, I mean, it is cool that you do have places like Noble Creature that are going into these buildings, and even like Studio Concepts that is over on Federal Street, and doing just the right amount in the building to keep up its aesthetic quality and respecting that while at the same time making it functional in today's day.
Yeah, especially I think in the case of Noble Creature churches. Now before, you know, a few years ago, I noticed going to Pittsburgh a lot that they've done a pretty good job of repurposing churches, like say into restaurants as one example. There's a good Syrian coffee house that's in an old church in Pittsburgh. And because, you know, a city like Pittsburgh, kind of like Youngstown, you had a lot of ethnic churches that dissolved basically because the people had either left or church attendance was way down. So I think it's important in the churches because of A, the historical nature, connection to local immigrant communities, but also because churches are often so beautiful to repurpose them and not just tear them down. So the Noble Creature is I think the only example I can think of in the Mahoning Valley of a really good repurposing of a church that I know of. I off the top of my head.
Well, Ira, you were on the hunt for a while, right?
Yeah, we were, you know, we were looking around Youngstown for a few years, and you know we wanted to be close to downtown, as close as possible. We live on the north side, so before we even bought our house, we were looking at places that, you know, we might be able to do both, kind of turn into our business and live. And it just turned out we ended up buying our house first while we were still looking. But yeah, back when we were looking in 2012 or so, there seemed to be a lot more property available. I think the biggest concern was either there was too big or too small. There wasn't anything kind of right in the middle what we were looking for, and some were more like warehouse spaces. There was a couple of spots we looked at that was it was the old cigar shop on Front Street, which was really I think it was Front, is that Front Street there, right by the amphitheater?
Is it the Frankel Brothers cigar? I think that's down on Phelps, maybe.
That might have been it. Yeah. So
I think that's it.
But yeah, so we had looked at a couple spots, and we knew we wanted like an old old building with character, and just because it really kind of fits the vibe what we were doing. You know, a lot of barrel aged sours, a lot of oak, a lot of wood. We came across this place a little later on, but it, you know, first thing we had to make sure we could make beer here. So, you know, checked out the basement, made sure that we could get tanks in and all that. And it turns out we could, we had enough space. So, I mean, it's just a beautiful building. We still have a lot of work to do, you know, on the exterior and just fixing things up, cleaning things up. We did the best we could with the time we had in order to get up and running. But I mean, there's a lot more you could do. But at the same time, like you said, we want to keep the integrity, not change it to the point where it's, you know, obviously it's still going to be recognizable as a church. But, you just clean it up and give it a new life. And I think, people appreciate that. It's, you know, it's a public house, you know. It's not religious per se, but it's a place where people get together and, you know, share stories, make new friends. And, you know, it's kind of, you know, the vibe that we wanted. You know, we wanted people to come together and have a place to get away from it all. And so do what we could. And we're super happy to be here. You know, we love this spot, even though it gets a little chilly in the wintertime, a little warm in the summer, but
nothing that you can't put on a tank top or put on a sweatshirt for. I like to consider you guys as one of the places that is a foodie establishment as well. I do. Marcy is a great cook, chef, whatever, a baker. Your food is phenomenal. The move.
Thanks. Yeah, they're doing some awesome stuff back there in the little kitchen that we have. But yeah, we try to just more repurposing. You know, we try to make all the breads made in house, and we use spent grain from the brewing process to incorporate that into the dough. So we try to use everything. We're actually using dough that we don't use at the end of the day. We make beer back again out of that. So it's, you know,
that's like my favorite thing. And I also love that beer too. It's at what, 3.8%?
Yeah, it's just a little like 3% Lithuanian inspired beer that's typically made with just you know, rye bread and whatever kind of fruit they would have. Usually a lot of lemons flying around, raisins usually go into it. And then typically just they would just add some sugar, and then it would be more like a soda. It wouldn't even be, you know, that high in alcohol. It was just you know, more just like a carbonate. They just used the fermentation for carbonation, but it usually came from you know, like a sourdough yeast culture, just whatever kind of bread yeast they had laying around. So we like to do that more in the summertime. It's just nice, you know, tart, easy drinking.
It's absolutely perfect. So when I first heard of tell me if this is correct, obligatory expletive. At least last time around, who knows what the name will be this time, but
I think we'll keep that. It is not fun to make, that's for sure.
Yes. So I asked Ira, I was like, is this from the documentary Wasted? Sean, have you seen the documentary?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, you have some time, both of you.
Yeah, I gotta watch it.
But it's a phenomenal documentary, and basically about the food waste globally. And like, but different things that people, it's not just all negative, shame, shame, but it's cool ways in which people are trying to minimize the amount of food waste. And one of it is a beer in London. and they go around, this brewer goes around, or more of the manufacturer side, they don't have actual brewery, but they just produce. But they go to all the restaurants in the area and collect the butts of bread, the ends. And then they create, so instead of that being food waste, they then create beer from that to help eliminate the amount of food waste that there is. It's so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's what it's all about. We're, most of our spent grain that obviously doesn't go into the bread we make, Purple Cat has been taking it. And then, you know, they have a great composting program over there at their farm, which then they're using for their, you know, vegetable gardens and everything, which we're going to in turn use that for brewing, for, you know, the fruits that they're growing and everything. So it gets back to that whole, you know, community, how we can all work together with, you know, in our different areas of expertise to really tie the community together. And that's kind of another thing, you know, that's unfortunate with all this too. I mean, we're not, you know, they're not up and running right now through this either. So we're trying to figure out what to do with all our spent grain. We have that little pop orchard on the north side. So we're going to, you know, work on starting our own little composting program there, but it's just a lot more, you know, time and effort where it could go to somebody that actually knows what they're doing. Yeah. But yeah, it's, you know, we do what we can to make it work. And when the kitchen, you know, was up and running, we were planning on, I don't know when that'll be up and running again at this point, but you know, we wanted to use a lot more local seasonal produce for our menu. And what we don't use at the end of the day, we've been starting more food focused fermentations downstairs, where we're, you know, making a lot more, you know, even just hot sauces from peppers or fermented, you know, cabbage, sauerkraut, pickles, carrots, you know, anything that we have excess over to ferment that and use that, you know, down the road, since that shelf life is there. So yeah. So it's a whole nother project that, you know, we wanted to really kind of, we've done a little bit of it, but really kind of rolled that out a lot more this year. But, you know, I'm not sure when we'll get to that at this point.
I think we all have a little bit more time. And I actually was speaking with Ellie Platt earlier, and she goes, I think the most important thing for all of us is just to be kind to ourselves and say it's okay that we're not, especially like if you see, I mean, we're all probably paying a little bit more attention to social media right now, and you see these fabulous pictures of everybody doing these amazing things right now. And I'm kind of taking it day by day, trying to like figure out what my plan of attack will be. How is everything going to be handled? That it's okay. It's okay that I'm not a rock star doing something amazing, crocheting clothes and blankets for all my kids and having them have straight A's, never having a meltdown, which is completely reality. That I think with all of us and everything that we do, I think that we should just be kind to ourselves and to one another.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's the, it's easy when, you know, you're supposed to be practicing social distancing to kind of like lose a sense of humanity. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you like shouldn't talk to people or, you know, smile and, you know, be nice to people. It's just, you know, it's just keep your distance. So I, you know, hopefully we can all come through this, closer than we were before this. But, you know, I think it's there's going to be a cultural shift, especially in big cities where, yeah, you know, a lot of you know, small independent restaurants, breweries, businesses that have been affected might not make it through. So it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next, you know, half a year or so. But
so, Sean, do you see any historical book written about any of this besides the comparison?
There'll be thousands or millions at some point in time, you know, in the future. Obviously, this will be written about and analyzed and overanalyzed, you know, a million times. But right now, for those of us who are living through it, you know, one thing it makes me all think about was my grandmother, who died at the end of the 1990s. She was almost 100. So she lived through the First World War, the Spanish flu, the Great Depression, the Second World War. And one lesson I think we could take from that depression era generation is that the idea that, you know, you mentioned earlier, people feeling guilty about, oh, I'm not being productive enough in my quarantine time and I'm not looking good. That would have been a very foreign concept to people back then. You would have seen people out on their porches, interacting with neighbors, trying to help each other out. Obviously, what people went through, say, during the Depression is far worse than what we're going through now, at least, yeah, at this point. But you had a lot of social solidarity that doesn't exist today. Yeah. We're a much more individualistic culture. We're much more cut off from family and neighborhood than we were then. I mean, it's almost completely different. So I think that when we get through this, it would be nice to see a little bit of self-reflection as a society, look back and say, well, is there some middle ground between the extremely cohesive, extremely traditional culture of, say, the 1930s and the very individualistic kind of self-centered culture that we've been up until this point? And I think that would be a good thing if people would rethink that and be like, well, you know, more to life than, you know, how are things going with me and my next promotion and this thing I bought and how I look on Instagram, you know, a refocusing on other people and our relationships with other people. Hopefully that'll be something that could change coming out of this.
Well, I also hope that during this, that we're seeing the significance of different aspects of our community. Like you said, not just ourselves and not just our families, but our neighbors and other businesses and everything, that we are going to be more vigilant to make sure that we don't lose those things that we did love so much. A month ago? Not even a month ago, but we're limited to now, that we appreciate them much more than that probably any of us were before.
Yeah, as Ira mentioned, you know, we're going to lose, I mean, we don't know, but we're going to lose small businesses and coming out of this. And one thing I've been trying to encourage people is talk amongst yourselves, contact your local representative, encourage another, not to get too political, encourage another stimulus plan and encourage more attention be paid by the federal government to small businesses and helping small businesses weather through this. And I think they're doing a better job so far in Europe than we're doing here. And I think that, you know, we need to change that.
Well, hopefully we will start. I mean, it's interesting because, again, not to get political, but like it's interesting because in the great scheme of things, your national government is supposed to be looking at your state level governments to see how things are functioning and running to help better what they do on a national level. And I hope that being as we are, much more advanced and global than what we were in the 1930s, that we basically are looking at other nations and seeing what they are doing to help the communities as well.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I think the landscape's going to look a lot different when a lot of these independent businesses, small family-run businesses, might not be able to make it through. You know, it's not like the big chains that have the deep pockets where they can weather this a lot, you know, easier. I think you said it right. I mean, I think appreciate what you have in your community. That's really what, you know, builds community. Is that's why, you know, people move to Pittsburgh or Cleveland or New York City. I mean, you just look at the diversity and all the, you know, just the how many different restaurants there are down the street or little shops, boutique shops that you can go to that, you know, might not have access to anymore. So I think it's important to support that as much as you can. And like you said, talk to your governments at a local level and see what we can do to all get through this. So I know they're doing, I guess they're doing what they can at this point, but we won't get into all that, like you said. So. But yeah, well,
this is, in I will say, everyone's defense, this is uncharted territory. I mean, it is very doubtful that we have any representative that has been around since 1918 to be able to apply their knowledge and experience to be like, no, that didn't work, or this is what we need to do. So yep. I mean, we do have references to look back to. But when you are in the heat of the moment, it's difficult to do as much research and checking things out, and you just go by trial and error. I mean, I could tell you on a high level what the mortgage is with the whole stimulus package. What it basically did was, from my understanding, with certain loans, this isn't applied to everyone, is that with the stimulus package, it actually created with FHA, VA, USDA, like a predatory loan situation, that then that meant that lenders couldn't do it. Because thankfully, out of 2008, we are no longer allowed to have predatory loans. So, but at least they caught it and are trying to fix it. But I mean, I don't know. What did they do? How many days did they put that package together?
Oh God, yeah, I know. I can just say, from all the pitfalls we can consider of owning and operating a brewery, global pandemic was not one that we ever considered we'd see. So, just playing it day by day, it's just crazy. So
it is. Well, I am still hopeful that come June, when the weather is a little bit nicer, we will be able to be a little bit closer than 6 feet apart from one another. And I hope that we are on the downside of things in an expedited way. I don't know if that's possible, but I mean, I have hope. How about you, Sean? What do you think?
Yeah, nobody knows, obviously, but I'm hoping too. And that's all we can do sometimes.
And in the meantime, we still get to see each other now via Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, all these other mechanisms that we didn't have in 1918. So that's a positive.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, thank you guys both for coming on. And just real quick, I know, Ira, again, like there's no events happening at Noble Creature, but please let everyone know how they can still have Noble Creature as part of their lives right now. I know you guys have the online ordering, right?
Yeah, just, we're just trying to every week keep everyone updated via Facebook or Instagram. You know, we don't have our email list up and running quite yet. We were in the process of, redoing our website and everything before all this went down. So that's on hold right now for a little bit while we, figure out this online ordering. We're trying to work out all the kinks there, but I think overall it's going pretty well. So you just check us out. It's noblecreaturebeer.com, or find us on Facebook or Instagram. We're trying to just keep doing what we're doing safely and as possible. And hopefully we can all get through this as quickly as possible and see everyone again.
And get your orders in quick when it comes to their bagels or bread, because they'll sell out pretty quick.
Yeah, they do.
And what about you, Sean? What do you got going on? So you're working on your book, reflecting back on 1918 Spanish flu.
Yeah, it's an article. So that's what I'm working on right now. I'm trying to get that out. I probably have plenty of time to get it out and have it still be relevant. But that's what I'm trying to do at the moment.
Cool.
Any awesome photography?
No, I started, and then I'm like, I should just stay at home. I'm probably just going to stay at home, I think, as much as possible. I think it's probably just better. Even though you're out, you can do stuff out by yourself. I think it's probably just better to take the advice and stay at home inside as much as possible.
Definitely good advice.
Bite the bullet.
Yeah, to help. I feel like it'll help, again, expedite us being able to come back out into the world again if we do that. So, well, thank you guys. Absolutely. And thank you. I didn't get too bad with...
All right.
I've only had a few sips, though. It might be a different story, but thank you both, and appreciate it. And if anybody out there wants to hear more about Homes and Hops, definitely search the keywords Homes and Hops, and definitely pay attention and follow your Instagram and Facebook pages of your favorite establishments, such as Noble Creature. And also, I don't know, Sean, if you have a business Facebook page for your photography, because your photography is phenomenal. I absolutely love it. So
people can just search like Sean Posey photography or photographs, whatever. I've got a lot of stuff at a lot of different places and people can look at it that way. It's pretty easy to find.
And then in the meantime, you can also read Sean's books that he has out there.
Plenty of time for that.
There is. And it is pretty cool to hear about how the city, this was one of the first cities that had the housing and which made Youngstown so attractive to a lot of other people was because we did have those housing developments, right?
Yeah, the beginning of public housing is here in the city. We got the first, when they passed the U.S. Housing Act in 1937, the first public housing project with financing from the federal government that they authorized was here in Youngstown, yeah.
Yes.
So it's a notable thing.
That's awesome.
I paid attention. Thanks, everyone. Thank you guys
for coming on. Hey, thanks, Lisa.
Bye.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us.